Hey there. Well, November is here, and if you're in the Northeast like me, it's getting colder. The leaves have gone from crimson and bright yellow to brown, and for the most part have fallen from the trees. Darkness falls early, and the summer triangle is high overhead as night falls. November is a time to enjoy the cool weather and the clear, crisp skies that many November nights bring us. In this episode, we'll explore the planets, some conjunctions, and three meteor showers, and then we'll take a tour of some of the best examples of deep sky objects that can be seen on November evenings. If you're watching on YouTube, please like, subscribe, and comment. And if you're listening on audio, please leave us a nice review on your podcast platform. Oh, and we love to get your questions, suggestions, and comments. You can always email us at astroguypodcast@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 973-404-0380. We have a contest that we're going to be holding as soon as we hit 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, so stay tuned for that. If you'd like to help support the Astro Guy podcast and YouTube channel, you can always buy us a cup of coffee. The link is in the show notes. Thank you. Okay, let's get to some astronomy.
Welcome to the Astro Guy podcast. I'm not an expert. I'm an amateur like you. I'm here to learn and here to teach. So let's enjoy the ride together. Carpe Noctem. Seize the night.
Welcome to the Astro Guy podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Zuhl. There's some astronomy-related news that just happened right here in New Jersey. The Holmdel Town Council just announced that they will be purchasing the 35-acre part of Crawford Hill that contains the Horn antenna, with the intention of converting it to a public park. This means that the famous Horn antenna that confirmed the Big Bang will remain where it is and will be featured as part of the park. This is great news that this historically important site was saved. If you're ever in the area, it's worth a visit. An important note to remember, for most of us in the U.S., we'll be setting our clocks back 1 hour on November 5th. Don't forget. Okay, let's get to what's happening with the planets in November of 2023. Mercury is lost in the glow of the sun for most of the month. At the end of the month, you can try to spot it just after sunset, where it will be low in the southwest. Try using binoculars, as it may help you find Mercury in the bright twilight. Venus, on the other hand, is much easier to spot in the morning skies. On November 1st, Venus rises at 3:34 in the morning and shines brilliantly at magnitude minus 4.4. It's a little past its first quarter phase, showing a 55% gibbous appearance, and it spans 22 arc seconds across. On the 30th, it rises at 3:20 in the morning and has faded slightly to magnitude minus 4.2 and has appeared to shrink slightly to 17 arc seconds in diameter, and it will show a 67% gibbous phase. As November goes on, Venus rises a little later each morning. It should be easy to spot, but the best views will be early in the month. On the morning of November 9th, observers in most of Europe, parts of Greenland, and North Africa will see Venus get occulted or covered by the moon. Observers in the U.S. won't get to catch the occultation, but instead will be able to observe a very close pairing of the 15% waning crescent moon about half a degree away from Venus. This should be absolutely stunning visually, as well as in binoculars or a telescope at low power. It's definitely worth getting up early to see it. Mars is lost in the glow of the sun all month long. Jupiter is putting on an excellent show in the November evening skies, spending all month long in Aries. It reaches opposition on the 3rd, when it rises when the sun sets and sets when the sun rises, as it will be opposite the sun from the Earth. On the 1st, Jupiter rises at 5:57 p.m. and is shining brightly at magnitude minus 2.9 and is spanning almost 50 arc seconds in diameter, which is the largest that it will appear during this opposition. By the end of the month, Jupiter will rise at 2:53 p.m. and will have dimmed slightly to magnitude minus 2.8 and shrunk very slightly to about 48 arc seconds in diameter. In binoculars, you can spot the four Galilean moons, while in a telescope, you'll be able to spot the equatorial bands on the planet and other features, like the Great Red Spot, which has shrunk quite a bit lately. On the evening of November 24th, the 12-day-old waxing gibbous moon will be about 6 degrees west of Jupiter. At 6 p.m., the pair will be about 30 degrees above the east southeastern horizon. They'll be near each other all night long. It's going to be a pretty cool sight. Saturn spends all of November in Aquarius. As darkness falls on November 1st, Saturn will be in the south-southeastern sky, shining at magnitude 0.74, and the disk will span for 17 arc seconds, while with the ring system, it's about 40 arc seconds across. It sets at around 1:47 a.m. on the 1st. By the 30th, Saturn will have dimmed to magnitude 1.1 and will set at 10:45 p.m. So November and December will be the best times to still try to enjoy Saturn during this opposition. Next year, the rings will appear a little more on edge, so noting their appearance now compared to when it reappears in the evening skies next summer will make for an interesting comparison. On the evening of the 20th, the 8-day-old moon will be 1 degree south and 5 degrees east of Saturn. This will make for a beautiful pairing. Uranus spends the entire month in Aquarius and reaches opposition on November 13th. Uranus is about magnitude 5.7 all month long, and the planet spans about 3.7 arc seconds across. Using binoculars and a pair of 4th and 6th magnitude stars as guides, you should be able to easily spot the pale bluish disk of Uranus. If you're under very dark skies with a larger scope, try spotting Uranus's four brightest moons. They're between 13th and 14th magnitude, so they're very faint. I was able to see three of them once in a 14-inch scope many years ago from a dark site, but it is a bit of a challenge. On the 24th, the moon will be about 4.5 degrees west of Uranus. Neptune is in Pisces all month long and glows faintly at magnitude 7.7. In a telescope, you can use several nearby stars to help you locate it. Stellarium or any other planetarium app will easily help you locate the planet. In a telescope, patience and a good map will be the best way to spot Neptune. You can see it in binoculars as a bluish star-like object, but in a telescope, you should be able to make out Neptune's bluish disk that spans a little more than 2 arc seconds across. This month sees 3 minor meteor showers. November 5th and 6th will see the peak of the annual Southern Taurid meteor shower. Unfortunately, the 44% illuminated moon will likely wash out all but the brightest meteors. The shower has a zenithal hourly rate, or ZHR, of 5 meteors per hour, meaning that under the best conditions, you should expect to see 5 meteors if the radiant were at the zenith or directly overhead. So you won't see a lot of them, but they're relatively slow meteors that hit the atmosphere at about 18 miles per second. On the evening of November 11th going into the 12th, we'll see the peak of the Northern Taurid meteor shower. Expect a very similar appearance and ZHR. However, the moon will be nearly new and won't interfere with seeing the meteors. So from a dark site, you can expect to see some nice, relatively slow meteors. Both the Southern and Northern Taurids are remnants from the comet, Periodic Comet 2 Encke. Just a few nights later, on November 17th into the 18th, will be the peak of the annual Leonid meteor shower. This shower is famous for its periodic outbursts that are regularly timed, but we won't experience that again until the end of this century. This year, the Leonids have a ZHR of 15, but unlike the Taurids, The Leonids are very swiftly moving meteors that collide with the atmosphere at about 44 miles per second. The Leonids are the remnants from a near pass of Comet 55P, Temple Tuttle. The crescent moon sets a little after 8 p.m. on the 17th, so it's not going to interfere with seeing the Leonids, which will be best seen after midnight. Whenever you're going meteor watching, remember to bring a blanket or a chair to sit on. Dress in layers, and bring something to stay hydrated. Binoculars are always fun to have handy when watching for meteors. Moving out of the solar system, let's explore some of the best deep sky objects that are visible on November evenings. Most, but not all of the objects that we'll explore this month are circumpolar, meaning that they never set, as they're close to the North Celestial Pole. This holds true for most of the US and Europe as well. So even though they may be above the horizon all year long, they're well placed for observing at this time of year. Our first object on this month's tour is the globular cluster M2 in Aquarius. The cluster glows at magnitude 6.3 and can be spotted with the naked eye, although I've never been able to spot it without using optical aid. It is, however, an easy sight in binoculars, appearing as a fuzzy glow, brighter in the center. In a telescope, you'll be able to resolve dozens, if not hundreds, of the cluster's member stars. M2 is made up of about 150,000 stars and is 55,000 light-years away from us. It spans 16 arc minutes across, making it about half the size of the full moon. This is a fun cluster to observe, and it's easy to find. To locate it, start at the magnitude 2.9 star Sedalsud, or Beta Aquarii, and sweep north between 4.5 and 5 degrees, and you should spot the cluster. The next stop on our list is the famous Helix Nebula, which is cataloged as NGC 7293 and as Caldwell 63. This is one of the best examples of a planetary nebula that is within easy reach of amateur instruments. It's also one of the closest planetary nebulae to us at a distance of only 650 light-years. The Helix is relatively bright at magnitude 7.6 and spans about 25 arc minutes, making it about as large as the full moon in our skies. You can spot it with binoculars, but it's best seen in a telescope at low power. It's easy to spot from moderately dark skies with a 70mm refractor. For more light-polluted areas, a nebula filter will really help you to bring out the nebula. My favorite views of this have come with my homemade 8-inch F5 Newtonian and a 20mm Nagler eyepiece with a UHC filter while observing at the observatory at Jenny Jump State Forest in northwestern New Jersey. The ghostly glow of the nebula reveals more and more with continued observation. It's a fun object, but it's best observed when it's near the meridian, as it doesn't get very high for observers in most of the U.S. Star hopping your way to the Helix is pretty easy. Start at the first magnitude star, Fomalhaut, which I've also heard pronounced as Fomalhaut. From there, sweep 9.5 degrees north until you come to a sixth magnitude star. From there, sweep west about 6 degrees, and then nudge your scope south half a degree, and you'll see the Helix. Our next object is NGC 7789, which is often referred to as Caroline's Rose Cluster. This object was discovered by Caroline Herschel in 1783. You may have heard of her. We did an episode in our Great Astronomer series about Caroline Herschel. I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. Check it out if you haven't listened or watched it. This is a really cool open cluster in Cassiopeia. The cluster, which is about 7,600 light-years from us, glows at magnitude 6.7 and spans 16 arc minutes in size. In binoculars, NGC 7789 looks like a mottled glow, about half the size of the full moon. In a small telescope, you'll be able to resolve several of the cluster's stars. With an 8-inch scope under dark skies, you can make out dozens of colorful stars that resemble the swirling pattern of a rose as seen from above, hence the name. Finding Caroline's rose is also easy. Start at second magnitude Kaf in Cassiopeia and sweep south for 2.5 degrees, then sweep west for 1.5 degrees and you'll see the cluster. Our next object is a bright and compact open cluster that contains about 170 stars, although only a couple of dozen are within reach of amateur instruments. Located about 10,000 light-years away, the cluster shines at magnitude 7.4 and spans 6 arc minutes in size. The cluster is relatively young, at only 22 million years old. M103 is easy to spot in binoculars as a fan-shaped patch of light. While in a telescope, you'll be able to resolve many stars in the cluster. However, the brightest member stars are around 10th magnitude, so you'll want to be under dark skies with a 6-inch scope at least to get a nice view of this cluster. Locating M103 is easy as well. From Rukba, the star that represents the bottom left star of the W asterism in Cassiopeia, sweep 1 degree east and 0.5 degree north, and you'll see the cluster. Our next object is very close by to M103. Move your scope or binoculars 1.5 degrees east and then 0.5 degree north, and you'll see our next object, NGC 663, which is sometimes called the Lawnmower Cluster, and is the 10th object in the Caldwell catalog. NGC 663 is comprised of about 400 stars in an area about 0.25 degree across, and glows at magnitude 7.1. Some people have claimed to be able to glimpse it with the naked eye, but I have only seen it in binoculars or a telescope. In binoculars, the cluster appears as a roundish mottled glow, while in a telescope, you should be able to resolve a dozen or so members of the cluster. Either way, this is a fun and easy to locate cluster. Our next object can be a bit of a challenge, especially under light polluted skies, but it's relatively easy to see under dark skies, and a UHC or an O3 filter will help you to see this gorgeous reflection nebula, NGC 7023, or Caldwell 4, which is commonly known as the Iris Nebula. Reflection nebulae are exactly what they sound like. They're gas and dust that are reflecting light from a nearby star. The Iris Nebula is illuminated by the magnitude 7.4 star HD 200775. The nebula itself spans 18 by 18 arc minutes. Its magnitude is listed at 6.8. Although it is part of a much larger complex of gas and dust that's only visible in long exposures, the Iris is located about 1,300 light years away from us, and it spans about 6 light years wide. There are lots of bright, faint nebula within the constellation Cepheus, but the Iris is one of the prettiest. So at magnitude 6.8, it should be pretty easy to see, right? Well, its light is spread over an area about half the size of the Moon, so overall, its surface brightness is pretty low. But I've seen it with my 70mm refractor on many occasions, although it does show better in larger instruments. I've even been able to glimpse it with 50mm binoculars from a dark location in Vermont. Either way, if you have a light pollution filter, it should help to help you spy this nebula. Locating the Iris is pretty easy. Start at magnitude 2.45 Alpha Cephei, known as Aldebaran. From there, you'll spot the third magnitude star Alphyrk. From Alphyrk, sweep south towards Aldebaran for 2.5 degrees, and then sweep 2.5 degrees west, and you should spot the nebula. So far, most of the objects that we've explored, with the exception of the Helix Nebula and M2, are circumpolar objects. The rest of the objects that we'll explore this month are not circumpolar, but they are well placed on November evenings. The only galaxy on this month's tour is likely the most challenging object that we'll explore this month. Messier 74, which is sometimes referred to as the Phantom Galaxy, is located in the constellation Aquarius, listed at magnitude 9.39 and spanning 10 by 9 arc minutes in size. M74 is a face-on spiral galaxy that is located about 32 million light-years away from us. Because its light is spread out, it's pretty difficult to spot, especially from light-polluted skies. That being said, I've seen it from a dark sky site in New Jersey with a 70-millimeter refractor. It was faint, but visible. At that same site, using an 8-inch telescope with averted vision, the spiral arms became visible, while the core of the galaxy was easily seen. Patience, practice, and averted vision will help you to see this galaxy. While it may be a little tough to see, it's easy to find. Start at the second magnitude star, Hamal, or Alpha Aquarii. You'll see the 2.6 magnitude star, Sheratan, about 4 degrees southwest of Hamal. Extend the line from Hamal to Sheratan in that southwesterly direction for just over 11 degrees to magnitude 3.2 Alferg. Now, sweep east 1 degree and you should spot the galaxy. Our next object is much easier to see. Let's explore the large, bright, open cluster, NGC 752, cataloged as Caldwell 28 in Andromeda. In a future episode, I'll explain about the Caldwell catalog, which is a relatively new catalog of DSOs. NGC 752 is bright at magnitude 5.7, but it spans about 75 arc minutes in size, so it's big, bright, and spread out. The cluster contains 302 stars and is located about 1,400 light-years away from us. NGC 752 can be seen from the most pristine skies with the naked eye as a large, dim patch of light. In binoculars, you'll be able to make out several of the member stars of the cluster, and in a telescope at low power, dozens of member stars are visible, and there are about a total of 60 member stars that can be seen in amateur telescopes under the right conditions, but many of those are between 12th and 14th magnitude, making them more of a challenge. But even in a small scope, this is a fun cluster to explore. To find NGC 752, start at Almach, known as Gamma Andromedae, then sweep 4.5 degrees south and then 1.5 degrees west, and you'll be looking right at the cluster. The last object on our tour is M34 in the constellation Perseus. This cluster is fun and often gets overlooked by its neighbors, the Double Cluster, which we went over last month. Make sure to see the show notes to get the link to download a PDF of this month's DSOs with notes and links to finder charts. There's also a document that has all the objects since August of this year that you can download as well. Hopefully, over time, we'll fill it in with DSOs from previous episodes. Anyway, let's get to M34, which is sometimes called the Spiral Cluster. Made up of about 400 stars, M34 shines at magnitude 5.5 and spans 35 arc minutes. The cluster itself is about 7.5 light-years wide, and it's located about 1,500 light-years away from us. It can be seen with the naked eye from very dark skies as a fuzzy patch, while in binoculars, it should show some of the brightest member stars. In a telescope, you can see dozens of member stars in the cluster, which to some people appears to have a spiral shape. Do you see the spiral? Let us know. This is another easy object to locate. Let's start at the magnitude 1.75 star Mirfak, also known as Alpha Persei, and sweep about 9 degrees to the star Algol. Now, Algol varies regularly in brightness. It's a triple star system that has an eclipsing binary star that eclipses the primary star every 2.86 days, dropping its magnitude from 2.1 down to 3.4 for about 10 hours during the eclipse before it brightens again. From Algol, you're going to sweep west for 5 degrees. Then sweep north, just less than 2 degrees, and you'll be looking right at M34. As always, I hope that you'll go out and find and enjoy these objects, and that they become favorites of yours as well. Well, that's all for this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope that you found our time together to be fun and helpful. If you have questions or episode suggestions, please email us at astroguypodcast@gmail.com or leave us a text or a voicemail at 973-404-0380. If you're not already a member, please join the Astro Guy Podcast group on Facebook. You'll find other members, videos, blogs, and lots of other useful information there for your enjoyment. You can also visit our YouTube channel, The Astro Guy Podcast, for past episodes and other surprises. Please subscribe. Please consider leaving us a review on your podcast platform. It helps us to get new listeners. Thank you again for listening, and may your skies be clear. As always, carpe noctem. Seize the night.
I'm Wayne Zuhl, and this was the Astro Guy Podcast. Thank you for listening. As always, your questions, comments, and suggestions are welcome. Keep wondering. Keep your eyes on the sky. Have fun. Carpe noctem. Seize the night.